So first of all, everything with consumers, we always want disclaimers, you know, what we aren't or why we're doing it. So this is my first disclaimer. That's like the asterisk you often see. And that is that I'm not an expert. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not into marketing. I'm not even into teen welfare. I'm not an institution. I'm actually here under my own steam. I'm a sort of freelance consumer advocate. I don't work with Choice or anyone else like that. This actually isn't my day job. I'm actually quite active in things like reforming the funeral industry, holding financial advisors to account. I'm not a zealot, I hope. I'm not a deep green activist. I'm not a religious or on any moral high horse. But I am concerned about consumerism. Not being a consumer, but actually excessive consumerism and the way that this has actually become normalized in our society. So much so, we might think this is completely ordinary, completely harmless. Pushing the clicker, yeah. Our world has become one of brands. This is something that has happened in my lifetime and many of your lifetimes, and we seem to think that that is entirely normal. I'm not sure it is. I mean, I've said the things that I'm not. What I am is I'm a consumer advocate. And one of the things I strongly believe is that we as consumers drive the economic system, not the other way around, although it sometimes seems like that. We can, and if you go back to Adam Smith and John Maynard Keynes, who are really some of the fathers of economics, they always put the consumer at the center, and that's what I'm involved in doing it. We do have a consumer revolution going on in terms of technology and how that's empowering us. And I want us really to kind of, if we're complaining about the world, we can actually change it. I mean, the other thing I am is I'm a journalist by trading. So I'm curious. And I'm really curious about why it is that this particular issue, we hear the Pope talking about it very recently. We hear archbishops talking about it at Christmas. At the other end, we have environmentalists talking about it. But what we don't have is people in the middle talking about it, and we're the ones who are most affected. So I'm not going to ask you to start a conversation, because every conference I go to is full of four or five people who ask you to start conversations. And there's a limit to the number of conversations we can have. So if you just start to think about it, that will be enough for me. So one of the starting points was this picture I saw in the newspaper of Xavier and his first birthday. And his mother got a petting zoo. She got cowboy and Indian outfits. Xavier had a fantastic birthday. And I'm not being judgmental about this. Certainly, I have lots of stuff and junk, and you know, it's part of us. But what sort of birthday does a one-year-old really need? And if Xavier has this at one-year-old, what will he expect when he's 18 or 21? Or what will seem normal? And as the mother said herself, she didn't say how much it had all cost, but she said his parents would probably be uncomfortable with it. Now, one of the things about materialism is that it is a strong endorsement of materialism is strongly linked to your well-being and your level of well-being. And I'll explain some of the research around that. Now, I think as adults, we're old enough and ugly enough to look after ourselves. Now, I know that's not actually true, because we have credit card debt, we get into all sorts of problems with pokies and goodness knows what else. We can't look after ourselves, but kids certainly can't. So I'll be looking at what we can do, actually, both in terms of protecting and empowering kids. Because one thing I'm really fed up, and we're coming up to the Christmas season, is in the run-up to Christmas Eve, we'll have the Retailers Association banging on about we have to spend $95 billion by Christmas Eve or the economy will go to hell in a handbasket. And this is not an anti-Christmas message. I love Christmas. But I want Christmas, and I'm sure many of us do, apart from the Retailers Association, to come back to actually what Christmas or any other religious festival or any other festival we want. It's not about gifts. It's not about stuff. It's about the experience. So that's going to be part of the theme. First of all, some definitions. You know, as I've said, are kids vulnerable? Or are they savvy? And a lot of this has got to do, and there's some great to see some kids in the audience here today. These guys can run rings around us in terms of the internet and how to manage it. Not all of them need protection, but there are some elements in some ways which I do believe they do. Now, Dr. Jean Twenge was an author, and she studied Generation Y and asked, why are they so miserable? What's gone wrong between the 80s and the 2010s? Likewise, Richard Eckersley, who's an ANU researcher, when they look at this thing about why kids aren't quite what they used to be, why they report being pessimistic or not remembering or not sleeping, all these other indicators, often in the top three reasons, consumerism, materialism, money and excess attachments to those comes up on top. So what is consumerism? I mean, everyone would have a different definition of it. I would just suggest it's acquiring in ever-increasing amounts. And as we know from some of those diminishing marginal returns theory of economic utility, actually, the more we get, the less we feel from it. We know that. That's such an early thought. Yet still, we still seem to want more and more. Some of the research here about why people work longer hours, we work some of the longest hours in the Western world. The HILDA, which is the Household Income and Labour, and they've just recently reported again, they found the key reason for people working longer was to service debt, which they had racked up to feed, fuel, consumerism within the family. And often, as we'll see, that's to give stuff to kids because the parents weren't there to spend time with them. And what did the kids want in the first place was not the stuff, but the time. So this is definitely not holding kids to account. Anthropologists look at this. The Americans did a great one. I think it's true in Melbourne as it is in Minneapolis that 3/4 of all garages are used to store, 9 out of 10 garages are used to store stuff that doesn't fit in the house. And 3/4 of those garages are so full of stuff that they can't hold cars anymore. So, you know, you've got to really wonder. I've been guilty of that too. Okay, materialism. What is materialism? I suppose there's two sorts. It's a personality trait, but it's also a sense of a community. And as I've said, what is normalized? Are possessions seen as yardsticks of success or status? And that's certainly not something that's unique to our society. The anthropologists went through the Pacific and saw ownership of all sorts of things like shells linked with that. But it's that idea that happiness can be sought through acquisitions and that possessions actually make you happy. That's perhaps the more risky element as concerns young people. And if you look in terms, I'm not talking about wealth. The era of the $2 shop and cheap Chinese imports has made stuff and possessions affordable to almost everyone. And if you go back to the Middle Ages, I saw some great work where they priced a shirt that a noble would wear. In real terms, because they had to get the flax and beat it and make it and stitch it, the real cost, equivalent cost in our society was about $3,500 for a shirt. Well, you could buy an equivalent shirt for $20, $50 now. So we've seen as the price of stuff has really come down, we get more and more stuff. So I'm at this conference, and you've heard about people talking about depression and other versions of this conference, drugs, youth suicide, obesity, all sorts of top line, big terrible issues. So you're saying, well, what's the big deal with materialism? What is it? What are you really talking about? Now, I know some of the previous speakers in terms of eating disorders have referred to this. There is a connectivity. In fact, some believe it's not just a connectivity, but there's a centrality. And this is at the heart of many of these issues that we see is the attachment to stuff as a way, instead of relationships, instead of the internalities. I'll leave more of that to the psychologists to really explain. But Simon Chapman, who's a public health advocate, some of what you know, I saw him recently, bumped into him at something, said I was doing this, and he said, it's an acute illness. It's a chronic illness. And like any chronic illness, you don't know you've got it till it's crept on. And by that time, it's hard to do. So with obesity, we at least have measures like the BMI. We can measure it. This we can't actually really measure it. But I think that analogy is particularly interesting. And if you can see, this has just become normalized where some of those things have become sensationalized. Now, this one of the reasons I do this is that's my second son, Zachary, who's 13 years old. As you can see, he's like many 13 years old. He loves to spend time on the internet. Most of my life is trying to chase him off the screen and get him to do things. And I'm not sure what luck I really have with that. Growing up, he had lots of presents that people gave him, lots of things that I throw out on the council clear out, which was 2 weeks ago. And it really depresses me, not just what I throw out, but what other people throw out. And I know that it was given with all the best intentions. But Clive Hamilton wrote a book called Affluenza a few years ago. He actually spoke about the invasion of the kindergarten and the nursery, with kids seeing typically 3,000 ads a day. This is online, not just on television, and there's various figures. But I think one of the things that he highlighted that disturbs me most is he said that the best graduates from psychology schools and neuroscience, they end up working for marketing. They know how to get inside these kids' heads and flick their switch to spend, spend, spend. The world has changed. Now, we think that that was a golden era. In fact, it was Barbie advertised on television in the 50s, kids' TV, which was the first example of bypassing the gatekeepers, who are the parents, direct advertising to children, and children using pester power to get us to buy stuff. So Barbie is still out there, very successful, wouldn't take that away from them, but let's not think that this is a golden age. Of course, some things have completely changed, and this is an illustration of one of them. Again, kids' rooms and where they can go are an Aladdin's cave of devices and fun. And we laugh at that because it's a hilarious cartoon, but I think there is a sadness in that too. And again, I don't blame the kids. Who gave them that stuff? Who put it there? Who pays for the electricity? It's us. Now, lots of the research comes from America and the UK, which in some ways are equivalent country, but it was really Sharon Beder from the University of Wollongong who did some great work on this and wrote this book a few years ago. And she really talked about fostering discontent and advertising, making kids, turning kids into consumers who were defined by what they didn't have as opposed to who they were. And the stories, she said that the stories that kids now learn and remember are less those sitting on their grandparents' knee that might be from Brothers Grimm, far more likely to come from Shrek or some advertisements who are owned by big corporations that are vertically integrated, and there's all sorts of product placement. And this thing happens subtly. But she thought the idea of building up kids who would support brands into time immemorial. Now, in America, Juliet Shaw wrote this book, Born to Buy. She said children recognize logos by 18 months, ask for products by brand name at the age of 2 years. 3.5, they believe certain brands reflect well on them as being cool, strong, smart. By first grade, they can name over 200 different brands. I'd suggest that's pretty true here. Now, this is not a moral panic, I hasten to add, although some people do have this view of marketing. Marketing and advertisements do serve a purpose. They tell us things. Some of them are in the public interest. But we should, you know, some of the pushback argument is, oh, look, it's not advertising's fault. It's the parents' fault. It's the family environment that causes this. And in fact, the experts, the so-called experts, do take aim at parents, teachers, educators, and there's a few of those in the room here, because we have a strong negative ideological characterization towards predominant negative meanings. I mean, this is real expert speak, negative meanings around marketing. But look, I don't apologize for that, because we are closest to it, and certainly those of you in schools as well. So, as I've said, things have changed since Slinky. One issue, of course, is the internet, which has changed so much. And one world record we hold is that kids 9 to 16 are the most prolific, youngest and most prolific users of the internet in the world. And that was from a Queensland University of Technology study. Roy Morgan looked at this. On average, 14 hours on the internet. I'm sure that's certainly an understatement as far as my Zachary is concerned. But it went up 3 hours from 2010. So that's a pretty steep rise. And the indications are going on more and more. So you'd be saying, you know, advertising, you know, ban on advertising, controls on advertising. The Mothers Union, which is quite an active consumers group on this, and funnily enough is headed by a man in the UK, they looked at this, they were asked about a ban on advertising and on TV and billboards and radio aimed particularly at young kids. They said it's a waste of time because there's so much insidious advertising on the net, it doesn't matter if you banned it there. And one example here is this game called Lola Coaster, which is Chubba Chub, and I'm sure many of the younger kids would know and love this. This was a game played on Mum and Dad's iPhone. A researcher at Sydney University told me she counted 200 brand images in 1 minute. This was aimed at 5-year-olds. And we know with many of these games, they are quite addictive. So how much do kids have? One figure on an online survey was $5,000. Now, not all of that is just handed over. They earn it, too. But I think what's interesting is, what do the marketers think they're worth? Because kids drive a lot of purchasing. As far as Roy Morgan and they're the researchers think, they say that these kids, 16 to 13, drive an enormous amount of spending, buying decisions on cars, holidays, clothes, shoes, technology, toiletry, food. So they make a report on this influential group, and I thought I must get hold of this report. It's going to be great information to include in this little talk. So I went to the website and I clicked on it, and it was a PDF to download. How much do you think Roy Morgan would charge for a report on the purchasing power and pester power of these 6 to 13-year-olds? And, you know, look, I might have shelled out $50 or whatever and think that was a lot. If it was $100, I would have stopped. If it was $1,000, I would have fallen off my chair. You might fall off your chairs when I tell you it's $15,000 to get the report. So, to me, that is a pretty clear indication of the value kids have in driving purchasing decisions in households. It's a lot. So one of the reasons they're bombarded with ads is not just for things they want, it's for things they will make us buy. And look, brands are fairly central to this, and there's been an idea, I haven't found any references here, but in the UK, to brand bullying, and this is the idea. Funnily enough, not that kids get brands. When I was growing up, I remember my only brand I can actually remember, apart from Lego and toys, was actually a pair of Levi's jeans, and buying them and sitting in the bath waiting to shrink feet. But, you know, you look at a 12-year-old now, how many brands would they know, or would they buy, or would they expect? It's very much out there, and the brand bullying has been the issue, funnily enough, that parents who believed their kids would be bullied because they didn't have the requisite brands, and a few years ago it was trainers and hats and hoodies, and now it would be iPhones and iPads, they went into debt to buy these brands for their kids to avoid the bullying. So it's the mere fact they thought it would happen which caused the problem. So what does the research tell us? Look, I like this quote. The good life is equated through marketing with the goods life, and that they not only use up the Earth's limited resources, it makes us less happy, less inclined to help others, and that's psychologist Tim Kayser. So the research essentially tells us that we have problems through excessive materialism, consumerism. They are these kind of symptoms. They are fairly hazy. They are hard to put your finger at. They are common to other areas, but they are, in fact, quite provable. The Journal of Consumer Research, 2,500 people over 6 years, a two-way relationship between materialism and loneliness. Materialism fostered social isolation and isolation materialism. What about adolescents in particular? I mean, this was something that really struck me. Self-esteem increases in middle childhood, 8 to 9, to early adolescence, 12 to 13, but it declines during adolescence until the end of high school. And that was mirrored by patterns in materialism. So kids used materialism to compensate for low self-worth. I mean, some other interesting research has come out about us as parents, what we do. Those parents who reward their children for good behavior or good grades at school with material possessions end up breeding youngsters who are more likely to grow up and base their own self-worth on acquisitions and possessions. Not only their own self-worth or value, but other people's. Possessions will become far more important. And that's just through us giving stuff as opposed to giving our time or sense of accomplishment. And of course, that's the society. It's not just the families. And, you know, we know that bribes do work. But the warning is that it does come, what's called material parenting, i.e. that's expressing, giving stuff instead of love, that can really cause kids to grow up more materialistically. So, you know, often the argument around this is this a correlation or is this a causation? And the experts say it is actually a causation. Low self-esteem causes increased materialism and vice versa. They put a group of adolescents through a church program designed to steer them away from spending and towards sharing and saving. And the self-esteem of materialistic children on that program rose. Well, for a control group, it actually fell. Oops, still clicking on. Now, UNICEF did an interesting report. They looked at the UK and Sweden and Spain, and I'm afraid the UK came out very badly. They reported on these households full of broken toys, unopened presents, all sorts of electronic gear, and really, more than, you know, reported as opposed to suggested, that parents were compensating their absence from the household due to working commitments with stuff, which the kids didn't want, they couldn't use, it caused a whole lot of clutter. And when the riots, some people might remember, happened in London in 2011, sparked by a shooting by police, lots of looting of shops. This was by UNICEF, who I think know a bit, really actually saw this as consumerism being at the root of some of those problems. So much so, as a result of that, the UK government ordered some work, particularly looking at this. This was one, it was an assessment as opposed to a report. They really warned us about looking through a golden age and nostalgia. So there was a slight kind of warning there, but there's some more up-to-date work from the University of Sydney, and this is the first systemic study of the impact of consumer culture ideals on kids' social well-being. And by the way, the picture is of a new hot toy you can get when you leave here. You can order online from America. It's a shopping mall, and you can build your own shopping mall for your child so they can take their own dolls to do all the shopping. But the University of Sussex, clear evidence the links between consumer culture values and well-being are bidirectional, suggesting a negative downward spiral where lower well-being leads to consumer value adoption and in turn leads to lower well-being further. And in fact, those kids who get stuff or are given stuff to try and make up to their peers, that is an entirely counterproductive strategy. So what can we do? And I came across this image, which for me sums a lot of it up. This is Medusa. You'd remember Medusa, and people were the Gorgon. We were turned to stone when we looked at her. And I think we've been turned to stone by this issue, because it's either, if we recognize it, we think, what can we do about it? And if we can't see it, it's so common. So what can we do to get away from this? How can we get control back if we see this as a problem? Now, interestingly, this is a new book I'd recommend called Stuffocation, by trends forecaster James Wolman. He talks actually that we have thankfully reached peak stuff. That's the good news. A couple of years ago, he has various measures that in terms of acquisitiveness and buying stuff, we'd actually had enough. There was more downsizing, there's more meat-free Mondays and buy nothing month. These things that have been peripheral are beginning to move more to the center. That's the good news. The bad news was he said it would take about 50 years for us to get back to any sort of normality. So it's slow. But his encouragement, again, based on the research, is actually what we need and we value as humans, as families and kids, is not stuff, it's actually experiences. And again, markets are moving that way. It's what we can get for experiences. I had to look at this, again, a very recent report, looked at kids in terms of the developed world, and there was Estonia, Ethiopia and England. I measured 10 items that they had or didn't have. The English kids had most of them. The Ethiopians had the least, but as you can generally see, there's no correlation when you're a kid between what you have and your degree of happiness. The sad fact is when you grow up, it changes, and you are, which again seems to me underline the fact that this is not about kids, it's what parents think that kids need or kids want and giving them accordingly. Bondi Public School, where Zachary went to, this is Kate Kennedy White, who does an ethics class, and I've sat in on some of these and it's been wonderful material. She is asking the question of this class, would you rather have the brand new iPad with the retina screen, which of course they all knew about, or would you rather spend a weekend camping with your dad and two best friends? And there were four people on one side and the others on the other side. Which do you think was which? Well, I'm pleased to say that it was the three boys who wanted the iPad and the rest wanted to go camping. And that boy in the white, when they had the debate, he went for the camping side. So look, it's a sample of one, but I do not think I think that is quite, for me, is quite meaningful. So what can we do? Look, as families, as I've said, you know, and I do not stand up self-righteously saying this because I know how hard it is, but it is rewarding with a sense of accomplishment and satisfaction. It's showing kids that they can have more fun than devices. Devices do not equal fun. Experience and doing things equal fun. Limit ad time. I know there's Barbara Biggins and the media people out there with some very good advice, better than I would. Teach gratitude and giving. You can never do about. Practice what you preach. Kids soak up our envy, our acquisitiveness. It's what we do has a great influence. What can we do as a society? Certainly, you know, I have moved on this. In terms of there needs to be some control around advertising for the very young. They are not in a position where they can handle 200 brand images per minute. None of us can. Look what pokies do to adults. Kids aren't allowed to use pokies, but the very same techniques that seduce and hypnotize perfectly sane adults to pour their life savings down pokie machines are used on kids through games and other things to turn them into compliant
and greedy consumers in a way that does not bring them very much. Mindfulness, you know, that's something I'm sure you'll have heard about, but again, turning kids on, financial literacy and consumer education, it can go a long way. Again, that UK report says that we have to be realistic, and I'm not talking about doing away with consumerism. We all enjoy the benefits of a consumer society, but actually we do need to tone things down. But I think it is understanding and knowing what to do and when to do it. It's that protection of the young and the empowering of the old, of the elder ones. We've heard a lot about Greece recently, but you know, I'd suggest, you know, Greece, like any country, is just made up with people, all of us, and it's actually what our aggregate and cumulative decisions and options are that make a real difference. So I'm not suggesting that we can turn back the Retailers Association, the tide of consumerism overnight. I'm not wanting it to take 50 years. I think there is a middle ground. And this Christmas, you might be seeing something, because as a result of doing these talks, I met with some people and they threw down the challenge this week. Got to start this by Christmas. Not anti-Christmas, not the Grinch, but for God's sake, not letting, and I keep going about the Retailers Association, it's nothing personal, all the treasurer banging on about spend, 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 suggesting that there are alternatives that can make us a lot happier. And look, I end with this thought, which is from Abby from the 1950s. So, you know, I think that's still true now. Spend more time with kids and less money, and you can make them a lot happier. And I would suggest, as parents, you can make them a lot happier. I think in our interventions, we need to be far bolder. It was in 1874, the British Parliament protected children from the efforts of merchants to induce them to buy products and assume debt. 1874, Charles Dickens was still around, thank goodness, I'm sure he was to help. But you try and do that now with our governments to try and stop, you know, stop, protect kids from inducements of merchants to induce them to buy. Imagine all the lobbies that would be up against you. Well, it's time for us to really question and be bold and fight back. And I really do believe, while the youngsters do it, some of the older kids who are here, I'd like them to get their own networks and use their own power. They can change things. I would just ask you, as I say, you don't need to have a conversation, just start to think about it. But thank you very much.